Now is in session. Senator from the second, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate substitute for Senate Bill 667 be taken from the informal calendar and brought before the body.
Senator from second, I need to recognize Senator Cole to get to that order bill. Senator from Cole, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, without objection, the Senate will go the order of business of Senate bills for perfection. And I would ask you recognize the senator from the 2nd District on Senate Bill number 67.
Hearing no objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills on a perfection calendar. Senate substitute Senate Bill 67, Senator from the 2nd.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate substitute for Senate Bill 67 be taken from the informal calendar and brought before the body.
The senator from the 2nd moves that Senate substitute for Senate Bill number 67 be taken up for perfection. As many as those of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary, say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senate substitute is before
Mr.
the body.
Mr. President.
We are on amendment number one.
Mr. President.
Senator from the second, you may continue.
Mr. President, I would like to inquire of the senator from Green.
Senator from Green. Senator from Green does not appear to be in the chamber. Sergeant of Arms summons the senator from Green. While we are waiting on the senator from Green, for the body's sake, we are on amendment number one. Amendment number one, senator from the second has the floor at this time. Senator from Green, the senator from the second, is asking an inquiry of you. Do you yield to that inquiry?
Yes, I do, Mr. President.
Senators, you may continue.
Thank you, Senator. Senator, as you know, before we laid this bill over for the dinner break, we were considering Senate Bill 67, which is the Women's Health and Clinic Safety Act.
Yes.
And you and I were having a conversation about an experience you had, a number of years ago, I believe in Springfield, Missouri, when I guess a commercial office building changed hands.
Yes, and now the portion of this bill that caught my attention was the inspections and safety portion. And I heard the senator from Callaway talking about her experience in touring a facility, and it reminded me, called to my memory, the situation which I described for you. And my wife and I were invited to come. Long story short, basically, the clinic was closing, the abortion clinic that was housed in this facility was closing, and the owner of the property wanted to donate that entire building to a pregnancy resource center there in Springfield. So several of us were invited to go through the building. They had not been in there, so it was a kind of a small group. But
so, Senator, this was a building that formerly housed an abortion clinic?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
And I guess it changed ownership in the new owner.
No. The owner was the owner of the property.
Okay.
The abortion clinic was leasing the space.
Got it. They had a long-term lease.
Right. And okay. So when they closed, the owner of the property, this couple, wanted to donate the property to the Pregnancy Resource Center and give it to them as a gift.
Oh, that's neat.
So several of us were asked if we wanted to go and do a quick tour and meet the owner and that sort of thing. And so we went over there, and my wife especially, but both of us were just aghast at the condition of the facility. It was filthy dirty.
Really?
I mean, absolutely filthy. Well, the carpets were sticky. I remember my wife pointed out there was dried blood on this one area. It was dark and dingy and just absolutely filthy dirty. And I probably shouldn't even make this analogy, but I just remember thinking, I wouldn't take my animals here if this was a veterinary clinic, let alone have any medical issues taken care of for any human being. It was just disgusting. And you know, that the reason it stood out to me so much is I knew of two instances for that clinic where women were severely injured and had to be taken to the emergency room. In one case, the doctor, who was not from Springfield, was from out of town that would fly in,
right,
didn't want the attention of calling the ambulance, which they should have done.
Yes.
Put the woman in his personal car and took her to the hospital, which was all the way across town.
The abortionist put the woman in his own car
because
there was a medical emergency, and himself drove her to the emergency room?
Yes. She had severe bleeding, and it made the news because the ER folks at the hospital were just... You know, it was a severe risk for them because she was in worse condition, of course, when she got there.
Yes.
But those two instances, the other one, I think there was an ambulance that was called. But one of those ladies was very close to death. And I cannot remember the outcome. I think that they both survived. But I remember as we walked through there recalling those two scenarios that had unfolded in our community and then looking at how filthy that place was. And I mean,
yes.
Have you been in restaurants that haven't cleaned their floors in enough time that your feet kind of stick to them?
Yes, yes.
That's how the rugs were in this place.
Oh, that's disgusting. That's disgusting. In restaurants, you know, it was probably some sort of food substance. In a surgery center, you fear it's blood.
I had no idea, but my wife said, I got to get out of here. It was to think that they were supposedly caring for anybody in there, it was just so dark and oppressive. It was not a place of, you know, it was just really sad.
Well, that's
very sad.
You know, that's really appalling, Senator. I mean, I think it implies this was what maybe 10 years ago or.
I was in the House.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't remember what year
exactly
that was.
Exactly what year.
You know, if procedures like that are going to be performed, and you know, we've had discussions, I'm pro-life, it's not an issue that I file bills on, but I am pro-life, but I recognize the reality of the world that we live in.
Sure.
And if there are going to be scenarios where abortions are performed, I want to make sure that whoever is going in there gets the best quality care that they can get, and I want to make sure that it's clean, I want to make sure they're not, you know, doing something to harm that woman's health in some other way, whether it's through filth like I witnessed.
Right.
Or whether it's maybe through other unsanitary conditions, if they're, you know, using medical equipment that isn't sterilized properly, or if they're reusing syringes, if they're I don't know.
But right.
What I saw was disgusting.
Well, that's right. I mean, you know, you made the analogy to a restaurant. We inspect restaurants. We do unannounced inspections of restaurants to ensure that conditions are sanitary, that people don't get sick because of unsanitary conditions.
I've had a few clothes in Springfield.
Yes, I've been aware of that in the St. Louis metro area as well. You know, and yet in 8 of the last 14 years, no inspections were performed in the clinic in St. Louis, and not for want of findings the last time an inspection was found. One thing I noted, of course, in addition to rust, addition to dirt, in one case they discovered that single-unit vials of medication were being reused multiple times. And, of course, that's a huge no-no. Single-unit vials don't have preservatives in them to kill the bacteria or viruses or funguses that get introduced when that seal is breached. So that's a huge no-no to reuse single-dose vials. And yet, you know, and yet some would say, no, we don't need inspections at abortion clinics. And I think the experience of the senator from Callaway, your experience, I think those of us who served on the Sanctity of Life Committee, our experience from the evidence we gathered on that clinic, to me suggests not only do we need Senate Bill 67, but we probably needed it a decade ago.
Well, I would agree with that. And, you know, I just think sunshine is a good thing.
Yes.
You know, I don't understand. I'm glad we do restaurant inspections.
Yes, me too. Me too.
I don't want to eat shrimp that's been left out on a sushi bar, you know, that's not been cooled properly.
Right.
We had a restaurant close over that in Springfield.
Yes.
I don't want to get sick.
Yes.
A woman does not want to get sick because medical equipment was used twice when it was only supposed to use once, and you have contamination from one person to another.
Correct.
I think sunshine is good whether we're talking about this or we're talking about campaign donations.
Right.
I realize there's vastly different issues, but what are we so afraid of?
No, I think that's right, Senator. Right. I know of a case where several restaurant patrons acquired hepatitis A, and one needed a liver transplant. So again, that's why we inspect restaurants, and yet the insistence that somehow an industry that does invasive surgical procedures on women should somehow be exempt from the health and safety measures that we expect in other areas of our lives, other areas of medicine. I just don't understand that, Senator. I mentioned to a couple of senators the reason I brought up the case of Kermit Gosnell and his shop of horrors in Philadelphia is not for the shock value, although certainly that case is shocking, but despite dozens and dozens of complaints by women, by women's families, and in at least a number of cases, the pediatricians at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, probably arguably the number one pediatric health center in the world. Despite all that, there were no inspections in Gosnell's clinic for 16 years. Now, and why is that, of course? Well, it's political. The politically charged nature of abortion makes inspectors, politicians stay away.
I think it's more than that, though, Senator. With all due respect, I think it's fear.
Fear, yes.
I think it's fear, and the reason I say it's fear is because what does anybody have to lose from sunshine?
Yes.
What
yes.
does the restaurant have to fear of an inspection? What do I, as a realtor, a licensed realtor, have to fear of an audit by the Real Estate Commission potentially,
right,
whenever they want to?
Right.
We have, you know, we license so many professions in this state.
We do.
And we give the department and whatever commission they're under or whatever board they're under the authority under state law to go in and make sure they're doing what they say they're supposed to do or what they're supposed to do under state law.
Yes.
But we do that because it's sort of like the check and balance system within our various branches of government, three branches. But it's to just make sure. It's an accountability.
Well, it's to protect the public.
But that's right. And so there's an accountability there. But I think, I don't want to judge the motives, but all I can assume that it is fear of being found out. What else is there when
right.
everybody else has some kind of accountability and they're not afraid of it? When I was at the bank, we welcomed accountability.
Right.
I worked at one of the banks in town. You welcomed bank auditors because they a true audit helps you continue to stay on the right path.
Right.
It's nothing to be feared of. And I don't understand it any farther than it just being fear of, you know, the sunshine. And
that ought to be a major
concern to not only any legislator, not only any Missourian, but especially anyone who's a patient at any facility like that.
Well, you know, that is interesting now that you brought up the audits, the bank audits, the real estate audits. One of my lines of work is as a clinical researcher. So my clinical research center has had one FDA audit, and some sites fear FDA audits. I was actually kind of excited because once you have an FDA audit and everything goes well and you get, it's called a no action required letter.
Right.
That is something you hold up and you almost frame it and put it on the
yeah,
wall and show it off to everyone you do business with, because FDA audits aren't very common.
Mm-hmm.
But when you do get them, some sites, of course, get dinged very badly. I got a no action required letter. I was happy about that. And I didn't frame it, but we do brag about it to the various sponsors that we do business with. But, yeah, that's right. And, of course, we inspect nursing homes twice a year, child care centers twice a year, even radiology equipment we inspect once a year, and yet somehow abortion clinics think they should be exempt.
And you and I as conservatives have often stood, and I know I have, on some of these things. We don't want this accountability to be a tool for harassment.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
You mentioned nursing homes. There have been a couple of instances where the state board has actually, there have been a couple of situations where I've really felt like they were harassing a particular home, because those boards are made up of competitors that sit on those boards sometimes. And we would be up
yes.
just as much defending any individual that was being harassed by a tool that was only intended for accountability.
No, I think that's right, Senator. Yeah, thank you. Well, no, Senator, thank you very much for the inquiry. I think, once again, the Women's Health and Clinic Safety Act is intended to protect women, to ensure the kind of accountability that we insist on in other areas where the public's health and safety and protection is concerned. And, you know, thank you for sharing your story, your experience with me. And
well, I'm glad to do it. You know, it recalls, and of course, I've never mentioned names, but I have a good friend who actually utilized that clinic that I mentioned to you prior to my going through it. And I, you know, of course, immediately thought of her.
Right, right.
Because I thought, oh my goodness, I can't imagine what that would have been like. I just can't imagine. And then, of course, the concern for her health.
Right.
In that, just, oh, it was just like a house of filth.
Yeah,
it was
a nightmare.
Very scary.
Yeah.
Thank you, Senator.
Well, Senator, thank you for the inquiry.
You're welcome.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on Amendment Number 1 to Senate Substitute for Senate Bill 67? Senator from the 1st, what reason do you rise?
To inquire the senator from the 2nd.
Senator from the 2nd, do you yield to an inquiry from the senator from the 1st?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
You may proceed, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good evening, Senator.
Good evening.
So I want to talk for a minute, and I think there may have been some prior discussion of the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling in the case of Hall Women's Health and Others versus Hellerstedt, Commissioner, Texas Department of State Health Services. Are you familiar with that case?
Sure, I am, yes.
I think you were talking about that earlier in the discussion, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, of course, Hellerstedt, as you know, is in that line of cases from Roe v. Wade, carrying on through Planned Parenthood
right.
v. Casey, to Hellerstedt versus Whole Women's Health, issued June of 2016.
Right, right. So, which, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I think is the latest pronouncement from the United States Supreme Court in this field.
Yes, it is.
So, as I understand it, that decision struck down some Texas laws and or regulations pertaining to regulation of abortion providers, specifically a surgical center requirement. Is that a you might be more familiar with the case than I. Is that a mischaracterization of what that opinion
does? The Hill Women's Health v. Hellerstedt case pertained to the ambulatory surgery center requirements
right.
in Texas.
So, and I'm sure you can imagine where I'm going with this, of course. Missouri has similar, if not identical, laws on the books as well.
We have similar but not identical.
Right.
And as you may or may not remember, last session, because I was concerned that, quite frankly, our Department of Health and Senior Services had violated the law in issuing the license to the Columbia Abortion Clinic.
Right.
I felt last session that ambulatory surgery center requirements, which are weaker than Texas's, they can
sure.
be distinguished. That those ought to be tightened and toughened up, and I'm glad my bill didn't pass, Senator.
Well,
because
well, as a matter of policy, you're probably not, but as a matter of law,
because if you accept Hellerstedt as good law, which I don't, I think it's a wrongfully decided decision, and I look forward to it being revisited.
Sure.
Then Missouri's law, to the extent that in some ways it is weaker than Texas's, that is a saving grace of our law if you accept the U.S. Supreme Court decision in Hellerstedt.
Well, of course, the next question is, insofar as there has been subsequent litigation concerning Missouri's statute on point, the question before our courts right now, and to one extent or another, implicitly or explicitly before this body, is what, if anything, does Hellerstedt mean for the current state of Missouri law?
Yeah.
And there is pending litigation on that, is there not?
Yeah, there is pending litigation, and I'm not familiar with the details of that litigation. You know, we could discuss if you have specific facts on that. But I think that, you know, again, I think the U.S. Supreme Court in Hellerstedt, found Texas's ambulatory surgery law to be a significant infringement upon a woman's right to abortion, as articulated by Roe and Casey. I think it will be obviously litigated whether Missouri's law stands or fails. I think apart from that, Casey recognized the state's interest in regulating abortion
yeah.
for the health and safety of women,
yeah.
and even in the interest of promoting women to choose life. And certainly measures such as inspecting clinics the way
sure.
we expect nursing homes, daycare centers,
sure.
and so on, it would seem to be well within the parameters of Casey and even Hellerstedt. I think that is an open question, what the courts will do with Missouri's ambulatory surgery center law. But I think in either case, Senate Bill 67 is a much-needed piece of legislation.
Well, had Senate Bill 67 come to the Senate floor last night rather than this afternoon, my assessment of the state of litigation concerning Missouri's surgical center requirement would have been different. But as of today, it is my understanding that we have a preliminary indication that a United States District Judge sitting in Kansas City has issued what is titled a memorandum to counsel. It's not a court order, but it basically indicates that the judge is inclined to grant a preliminary injunction against the state of Missouri in connection with four state statutes and a number of state regulations. I think the sections in question, and again, it's not a full order. It's a one-pager, and I'll read it out loud here in a minute. I've got a copy that we're going to circulate. But so it's not crystal clear as to what the scope of the injunction will be. But I'll tell you the scope of what was requested, and I think the way the memorandum reads it makes it pretty clear that the injunction is going to be commensurate with the request for relief in the complaint. It's section 197.200, 197.215, 188.080, and 188.027, the latter two of which are squarely within the ambit of of Senate Bill 67. 197 is actually also opened up by the underlying bill. So we're talking about the same sections that are, you know, not to put, I mean, to use a cliche and not to be trite about it, but the patient here is on the table with respect to chapters 188 and 197. And let me, if I could, just share with you what the memorandum to counsel issued today by the judge indicates. It states that in the interest of providing time.
So, Senator, what is a memorandum to counsel? I'm not sure
That is a great question, Senator.
I'm not sure I understand what one of those
is. You know, you see those every once in a while.
Yeah.
And I'll say it's not clear to me precisely why today of all days that was issued. It may be happenstance.
Was there an injunction issued today, Senator?
There was not. There was an indication that one will be forthcoming. So here's what the court had to say today.
Sure.
In the interest of providing time to the state defendants to work through a plan to avoid collateral and unintended damage to standard medical regulations, I advise that I have decided to grant a preliminary injunction to plaintiffs on the two issues presented in their complaint, invalidating both the hospital affiliation requirement for doctors performing abortions and the requirement that abortion clinics meet the requirements imposed on ambulatory surgical centers. The Supreme Court invalidated both these aspects of regulation in Texas litigation last June. Missouri has not complied with that decision. Of course, we've only been in session for like 2 months since that happened. And I don't think the bill to do this has been moving terribly quickly. This one happened to make it to the floor first. The memorandum of counsel goes on to say the state defendants argue that this result will cause unintended collateral damage by deregulating abortion clinic requirements that are accepted as desirable and were outside the concern of the Supreme Court in the Texas case. If the state defendants are correct, the judgment to be entered could alleviate those concerns, and counsel should prepare an appropriate judgment form while I write my opinion. Court goes on to say, as I understand the problem, invalidating the ASC statutory requirement for abortion clinics would disable the director of the Department of Health and Senior Services from using regulations authorized by the statute that would be rendered invalid by the ruling. But I could probably accommodate that concern by staying the statutory ruling as to ASCs, which I assume are ambulatory surgical centers or abortion surgical centers, ambulatory surgical centers, for a specified period until the General Assembly can take action, and allowing the director to revise the regulations before the statutory change to avoid collateral harm. Prompt regulatory change within 60 to 90 days of my ruling seems required to satisfy the pressing needs of those seeking abortions and the needs of the plaintiffs to be prepared to offer the services which are protected by the Constitution. There may be easier ways to avoid collateral damage, and plaintiffs' counsel may wish to be heard to the extent an agreed procedural judgment can be submitted. That would be welcome. I expect to allow 10 days from my ruling for judgment proposals to be submitted. And that's dated yesterday. I think it was filed today.
Who's the judge, Senator?
The judge is the Honorable Howard F. Sachs, United States District Judge, Kansas City, Missouri. So who has been on the bench for quite a while.
For quite a while. A Clinton appointee?
I'm not even saying it was necessarily a Clinton appointee. But certainly, I believe a Democratic appointee.
Senator, and that is the Western District in Kansas City?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
So we're on to the Eighth Circuit, where I suspect Judge Sachs will be overruled.
One never knows, Senator.
Then we're on to the U.S. Supreme Court. So.
Which might be getting a ninth member any time now, if it hasn't already. I haven't checked CNN yet this evening.
As it was once said in 1980, there we go again.
That's right.
So I guess I would say a couple things.
Sure.
Even if Missouri had no ambulatory surgery center requirement for abortion clinics, and even if we had no physician privileges requirement that physicians have privileges at local hospitals, Senate Bill 67 would still be a great bill, because having accountability for the disposition of fetal tissue, whether or not it was done in an ambulatory surgery center, would be an entirely reasonable and, I believe, necessary thing. And having a requirement of annually inspecting those facilities where abortions are performed, even if you don't call them ambulatory surgery centers, would be an entirely reasonable and necessary thing. And finally, having concurrent jurisdiction in the Attorney General of the state of Missouri would be an entirely reasonable thing. So I'm not sure, although I would vehemently disagree with Judge Sachs's memorandum to counsel, whatever one of those is. It sounds more like not like a memorandum to counsel, but a command to the governor and the legislature of the state of Missouri.
I think what it would be called is a heads up, Senator. I think it's an effort by the court to let folks know what is coming.
Okay.
So in order to avoid any unfair prejudice in dropping a surprise preliminary injunction out of the sky that people then have to – may literally be violating by showing up to work and doing their job the next day.
Well, we appreciate that Judge Sachs did that for us. It sounds like he will issue his injunction. I think it will probably be stayed by the Eighth Circuit and again onto the U.S. Supreme Court, which makes us wonder why we did ever preempt this particular traditional authority of state government in 1973, We are where we are, and we'll discuss that another time.
And in that regard, Senator, I am not suggesting that the memorandum issued today does or even ought to have implications directly for your underlying Senate Bill 67.
Sure.
What I would say is it seems to me that it is inescapable that what is happening in the United States District Court for the Western District of Missouri is going to have implications, or arguably already is having implications, for these very chapters.
Missouri abortion law.
And so I would just suggest on today, April 4th, 2017, a few facts. You may be absolutely right about where this goes with respect to the Eighth Circuit, and you may also be correct about how they rule. I don't know. I think their temperament is sort of, maybe not the most unpredictable or the least predictable in that regard.
We generally know how the Ninth Circuit will be on things, and we generally know how the Eighth Circuit will.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing whether anything is an undue burden in the Eighth Circuit here. But regardless, my point is this. It's April 4th. It's not May 19th, and I do think that there is going to be an order entered that is going to have direct implications in the short term and or intermediate term, and conceivably in the long term, for existing Missouri statute in these chapters and for existing Missouri regulation. And I think based on the court's indication today, it seems inescapable that we're going to have at least some period of time, maybe an indefinite period of time, where we got laws on the books that are going to be blocked by an injunction, at least for some period of time. Now, So here's where I'm going with this. I would suggest a couple of different things that might instruct us as a Senate on April 4th. Because one thing I know, if there is an appropriate legislative response to what has come or what is coming, we're not going to be able to do a whole lot about it on May 20th, barring a special session. And I would suggest that with 67 on the floor in front of us, we may want to think about what that's going to mean and what that's going to look like and what the implications are, because I have a hunch we're going to have to be dealing with this. So,
well, Senator, we certainly have opened the relevant chapter that we're talking about here.
Yes.
No question about that.
Yes.
But I would also suggest that if Judge Sachs does what you suggest he will do, and I think we have no indication to the contrary.
Right. And a very clear indication to that effect, yeah.
That this senator, for one, and I suspect our attorney general and I suspect our governor, will vehemently disagree with the Honorable Judge Sachs's ruling and will defend Missouri law to the full extent of our powers. And if that means, being in front of the eight judges of the U.S. Supreme Court, or maybe a ninth judge, Justice,
sure,
at the time, so be it. I think I know where you're going with this. There's kind of an obvious amendment you could probably offer to this bill tonight. Of course, we have an amendment pending already from the senator.
That we do.
When the time comes, we can discuss that obvious amendment if any senator so wishes to offer it. But again, what one judge rules is not necessarily the final say in the matter. As I believe Thomas Jefferson once said, Judge Marshall has made his ruling, let him enforce it.
That's right.
And, of course, we believe in the rule of law, and whatever the final order of the highest court of competent jurisdiction is, Missouri will obey it. But I think it's premature to rewrite Missouri statutes based on the Honorable Justice Sachs's opinion.
Who, by the way, and my suspicion has confirmed, Judge Sachs actually was not an appointee of the Clinton administration, nor was he an appointee of the H.W. Bush administration, nor was he an appointee of the Reagan administration. It is my understanding, as I suspected, he is a Carter appointee, yes.
Carter.
Yes.
There we go. Well, I wish him good health, and I suspect he will be doing whatever legal work he hinted at in his memorandum to counsel. But I can we appreciate the heads up, however interesting the timing. However interesting the timing. Not that any judge would ever do anything political.
Well, I would suggest this. I think that this is probably just happenstance, but I think the inspiration for the memorandum to counsel was to basically let the parties brace for impact in an effort to try to do as little harm as possible with the injunction. But I note that much as the judge has gone through the exercise of letting the parties before him know where he's going, I have very possibly, by virtue of this inquiry, advised you as the bill sponsor where I may very well be going.
Yeah, I understand, Senator.
I thank you for yielding to my inquiry, Senator. Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator from the 1st, what purpose do you rise?
May I inquire the Senator from the 24th?
Senator from the 24th, you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from the 1st.
Yes, Mr. President, thank you.
Senator, you may proceed.
Well, Senator, you might be the one member of this body who saw this coming. I understand that you've actually introduced legislation pertaining to the Missouri state statutes that are implicated by the Hellerstedt decision.
Right, exactly. I did, and yes, I have a bill filed. If you ask me the number, I'm not going to be able to give it to you now. But
You know what? I'm the same way. I actually had that happen to me today. But so Senator, I have not looked at the calendar as reorganized by the motion we passed on Thursday. I haven't seen. Is your bill the next up?
That bill hasn't even been heard in committee yet.
It has not been heard. It has been referred to committee.
It's not on that calendar. So that is not going to be moving forward through my process with my bill number.
I understand your assessment of the probabilities and think that's likely the case, Senator, but I'm not sure I would give up hope just yet.
I'm not. You know what?
I haven't given up hope. We have a month and 2 weeks.
Right. I haven't given up hope, but it has not to date had a hearing.
Yeah, and as somebody once said, hope is not a strategy.
Exactly. Exactly. So do you have a strategy?
Why, Senator, as it happens, I do. Whether it is likely to be a successful strategy, of course, is quite another question. But I have a feeling there's at least one Missourian who probably appreciates what I anticipate will be a forthcoming amendment here, and that is the one who's penning memoranda and or court orders in connection with the Hellerstedt decision. But yeah, so do you mind my asking, I mean, was your legislation filed in direct response to that Supreme Court case, or
absolutely.
Have you actually been carrying that bill for years?
No, absolutely filed in direct response to that. I mean, we saw that happen and said, okay, well, these provisions apply here, and certainly these meet the standards that say that Hellerstedt says we can't interfere with a woman's access, we should not put burdens in her way, and when that happened in Texas, I said, well, we have those same situations going on here. We need to do what we can to change the statute because that is coming down the pike.
Well, and now we, of course, as of today, we not only have the U.S. Supreme Court decision, which I think has clear implications for Missouri law.
Right.
We now have a U.S. district judge in Missouri saying, I've looked at this and your law and these laws are not valid under Hellerstedt.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting because there was a question around the timing, and I actually think that what the timing does is give the legislature time to react and to sort of get our ducks in a row, if you will. And so I appreciate that timing. I'm not, you know, there was a sort of implication that this was politically motivated. I have no idea. But I do think that the fact that we're in session allows us to deal with it late today rather than not being able to have any kind of legislative response.
Well, I'll say, I mean, I don't know, from time to time, and we were talking about the transfer issue earlier today, and I could not help be struck by the Missouri Supreme Court's timing in that particular matter, which effectively gave the legislature no ability to respond to that particular decision. In this case, whether it was part of what the judge was thinking or not, the judge has afforded us an opportunity in the remaining 6 weeks of session to respond legislatively to his ruling, in effect holding that his forthcoming ruling, in effect holding that turns out Hellerstedt applies here in Missouri as well, being a United States Supreme Court ruling.
And, you know, the piece of legislation that I filed actually goes one step beyond what was in Hellerstedt. I don't know if in Texas they have a 72-hour waiting period, but I thought that that was another, based on actual real experience in people's lives, I know that that 72-hour waiting period has been a real burden to a woman's access to abortion, should that be the decision she makes. So,
well, and Senator, I'd love to see that get revisited. I don't think you were in the body when we passed that. You were over in the House, were you not? That was the year before you got here.
It was before I was, before I was in the Senate. And interestingly, my Senate bill number, they just sent it over to me, but my Senate bill number is 71.
Yeah.
So filed relatively early, pre-filed. And
four numbers lower than 67.
And I'll never forget that number again because 71 is just shy of 72. So there we go.
There you go. It's also, I believe, a prime number. But there I go again.
Yes, I think you're right.
As a 67.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry.
No, I'm the same way. I love numbers, and I love sort of playing with them and thinking about them, and I have yet to look at a clock when the time is 12:34, 1, 2, 3, 4. It just seems like I do that every day. And So, yeah,
right.
I think
well,
it's
and
fun
of course,
to think about
you,
prime numbers.
You also love clocks, Senator. I've been in your office. Do you still have the three clocks on your wall? I haven't seen in the new office.
I do have the three clocks. They're the three different time zones in the state of Missouri. One clock indicating the time in St. Louis.
Yep.
One clock indicating the time in Kansas City.
Yep.
And one clock indicating the time in Jefferson City.
Now, not to really split hairs here, but I mean, given
doesn't
that,
indicate the year, so we may be in a different century in one of the
well,
communities.
There is that, but given, I mean, not to like delve way into relativity here, but I mean, there. Anyway, there's some distance involved, gravity and whatnot. I mean,
right. They're just sort of for fun, and people who notice them usually laugh, and that's.
Yeah, I mean, theoretically, if you have clocks in each of the three cities over time. If you have three atomic clocks, that would be different. But
I mean,
you don't have atomic clocks in your office, do you, Senator?
Say that again.
You don't have atomic clocks in your office, do you, Senator?
I'm sorry, don't have what?
Atomic
clocks? No, I do not.
Atomic clocks.
No, these are battery operated clocks that we need to.
I can't remember if it's like cesium that they use in those. It's one of the elements on the periodic table that apparently, and I can't remember if it's like photons or electrons, but long story, it will flash exactly a set number of times per second per minute. I mean, so it's like the standard unit of time measure. I think it might be cesium, but I could be wrong. Knowing the senator from the 7th, he of the 8 spiders look up. He may be about to let us know precisely what what material it is that they use in those atomic clocks that you don't have, Senator. So, in any event,
I have to tell you, I just got a text from someone who was listening to our conversation about clocks and about, I guess, about numbers.
Yeah.
And texted me and said, "Nerds." All right, so that's where we are. But you know what? We both love numbers, and we both love.
That's right.
Anyway, so
yeah.
Just a shout out to that person.
Well, I'm glad we're entertaining at least one Missourian senator, because I'm not sure we're doing a whole lot better than that, just looking around the room.
Right. Well, and I just want to make a comment, because yesterday, I don't know if you heard me say this, but I was talking to Mr. President, and every time I got called on and said, "Well, I'm struggling because my glasses are broken and I'm having to use my one-plussers and can't really see what's going on in other places." And this same person who texted me was the person who came in this morning with a eyeglass toolkit from her mom, and that her mom had given all of the kids as a gift to keep with them, and she fixed my glasses this morning. So,
oh wow,
it's a new day, and
wow.
So I will just say, you know, Elizabeth, thank you very much for all you're doing and for paying attention to the debate and for, you know, calling the senator from the 1st and me out as being nerds. Appreciate that.
You know, I wear that like a badge of honor, Senator.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know what? Tell your friend if they want to hear real nerdery, just check in. Who knows? I mean, last night we were here at 10 till 1, and I'm not going to be pessimistic, but hopefully we can get this bill off dead center in some form or fashion long before then, but
well,
one never knows. All I will say is that there seems to be a pretty high correlation between debates that occur after the midnight hour and debates that are profoundly off topic.
Right. I agree. I agree with you. And, you know, which I know it's your inquiry.
It is.
But if you don't mind, for just a moment.
Sure.
Because I missed.
You can ask a question in the form of a statement, if that's what you're asking.
Thank you. I will ask
in
a question.
The form of a statement.
Let me think about that. But, you know, I was off the floor for a good part of the day working on another bill with one of our Republican colleagues whose bill has been put forward to see if we could find some negotiation or what
so
we might
I heard,
be able
yes.
to do. Yeah. So I missed some of the conversation. But, you know, I don't know if I heard the fact that, you know, just a couple of days ago, a few days ago, that the activists who created those videos that actually the current Bill 67 is based on and comes out of through the committee that was run by our former senator from Boone, that they were just charged again, 15 counts, for secretly recording videos in an attempt to discredit abortion providers and that 14 of those counts were illegal recording and one count of conspiracy. So this piece of legislation that we are dealing with now that is on the floor before us is based on an absolutely, I mean, we knew it then.
On an active crime.
A false premise. And I am,
well,
you know, I know they haven't been found guilty yet. However, I think these are very serious charges. And, you know, I think that we heard from, well, many, many people who were involved or who were what I would call the victims of these crimes.
Since it is my inquiry, Senator, do you mind my asking? I mean, I understand that the recording, at least some prosecutor has concluded that the recordings were illegal. Do you dispute the fundamental premise of what the recording showed or found? And I say that I don't know one there. I haven't seen them. I don't know. It's one thing if the recording was illegal, but frankly, in fairness to the senator from the second, I don't know that that changes what they showed. But I also don't know if what they showed is disputed or not disputed. Do you mind my asking you that,
well,
Senator?
Well, so my belief is one of the premises that was supposed to have been shown was a lot of conversation around the cost to purchase fetal tissue. And not a lot of conversation about what that was going to be used for. But the implication was that somebody, Planned Parenthood, was making a profit off of the sale of fetal tissue. And that is simply, so in those videos, what it didn't say was, what we never heard about was, the costs that were being discussed was not so that someone could make a profit. It was the cost it takes to keep that tissue, to maintain it the way it needs to be maintained for use, and to get it delivered to wherever it needs to go. And the fact that that tissue is being used not, you know, for, in some places, it is legal to donate tissue to be used for medical purposes, including finding cures for disease. So I'm very concerned that what was misleading there was it sounded as if a deal was being negotiated so that a body like Planned Parenthood could make a lot of money off this, and that has certainly never been the case. So it was very confounding to me, and I watched some of those videos, and they were very difficult to watch, and, you know,
I have not seen them.
Pardon me?
I will confess I have not seen them.
Well, they were very hard to watch. I mean, these were remains of, I believe that they were remains of aborted tissue, and for you to see it and to see that information so that somebody who is pretending to be there for scientific reasons to purchase this tissue to do some good, some greater good for society was, you know, I don't even know what parts of that are true since somebody was pretending to be there for those reasons. So I don't know how the videos were edited. I only know what we saw. I don't know what we didn't see. And I only know what I heard in terms of conversation going on about costs and the implication that was made, but never in any way made clear that this was for something other than how do you provide or donate tissue for the cause of finding cures for horrific diseases.
You know, save it for another day. There was an April 15th reference that just popped into my head.
You have to get your taxes done?
Well, no, that's taken care of. I'll save it for another time. So in any event, well, Senator, to not allow what I'm up to be shrouded in mystery any longer. In point of fact, I've been waiting to get an amendment drawn up, which I'm told I will have imminently.
Great.
That amendment is going to, among other things, strike the existing statutory provisions that I believe have already been invalidated by the U.S. Supreme Court and are about to be specifically identified, I believe, by a federal court here in Missouri as being invalid under that U.S. Supreme Court decision. And I just think that that's... That that's a discussion that we as a body need to have. I mean, that, if we're going to be talking about what we're doing in chapters 188 and is it 217? I think it is in a, or 197. I'm sorry.
Right.
I think the issue that I'm going to put in front of the body is inescapable. I mean, this memorandum of counsel says, and I quote, "Prompt regulatory change within 60 or 90 days of my ruling seems required." And I don't think that's just going to be the regs. That's going to be the operation of statute. So that's a fact of life that the state of Missouri is going to have to deal with in the days and weeks ahead. And the court has given us an opportunity to address it legislatively now rather than issue an injunction when we are not in session and have no opportunity to revise our statutes to comply with the Constitution of the United States.
Right.
Because right now, our statutes don't.
Right.
Our statutes, in black and white lettering, impose an undue burden on individual rights within the meaning of Casey v. Pennsylvania, as ruled by the Supreme Court in June and in this forthcoming ruling from the U.S. District Court, Western District of Missouri. We need to respect the Constitution, Senator.
Absolutely.
And we've got unconstitutional laws on the books. We need to take them off the books.
Right.
And I get that's not consistent with the policy views of the majority of folks in the chamber, and I respect that. I get it. But I worry about how it looks for us to be taking up a bill and possibly passing a bill that looks like 67 with this going on. I'm afraid that if we issue this kind of legislative response in the face of this forthcoming order,
right?
You know, if the judge is going to say, "Hey, you got 60, 90 days to clean up your books," and instead we double down,
right?
That might work out even worse for the state of Missouri than it already is.
I absolutely think you're right, and I really do think it was generous of the judge to put out this memorandum. You can look at it many different ways, but now we have an opportunity to deal with this before we do get ourselves into a situation where we make it worse for the people of the state of Missouri. So I agree with you. Now, we have an amendment already on the floor pending. Is that right?
We do.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm aware of that.
Okay.
And and theoretically, at some point, maybe we'll have something else to talk about. But right now, here I am. The only thing in my hand is a microphone, Senator.
Right.
So,
right.
You know.
Well, so, you know, we talked a bit ago about what's going on. And so you're waiting for some information from the table. Is that correct?
That is a very astute display of deductive reasoning on your part, Senator.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Look, it's 8 o'clock pretty much straight up, so, yeah.
Also in Kansas City and St. Louis.
In Kansas, I believe so, but I would actually have to check in my office with the clock.
Well, we know it's not mountain time.
Pardon me?
We know it's not mountain time in Kansas City.
Right, right.
I mean, I grew up there. I mean, there are parts of it that are hilly, but it's not.
Right. Well, and
it ain't the Rockies.
Having traveled throughout the state of Missouri, I was pleasantly surprised to learn that the entire state was in the same time zone. So that was, you know, it really made it easy to adjust to a schedule.
Yeah. You know, my, unlike our poor friends, and is it, I can't remember, as between Ohio and Indiana.
Indiana. That used
yeah.
to have. So I used to work for an advertising agency where I bought time on the air in different markets for different clients around the country. So Indiana. Oh, my God.
Yeah, try scheduling a deposition in Indiana. Yeah, it just, you know, 9 a.m. doesn't, yeah, anyway.
Oh, it was a nightmare there. But they've changed it, I understand.
I had not heard that.
I believe that they have, and I believe so. They've changed that crazy time frame so that you don't have 11 o'clock news sometimes and 10 o'clock news other times.
After the 11 o'clock news?
Pardon me?
So you don't have the 10 o'clock news after the 11 o'clock news?
Well, that is not exactly how it worked. But, no, there were different seasons where the late-night news that runs at 10 o'clock in St. Louis, for example, would run at 11 o'clock in Indiana, and then other times during the year where the 10 o'clock news in St. Louis would run at 10 o'clock in Indiana, and all of the other shows adjusted accordingly because they were on different time schedules in a way that I can't even remember how all of that worked. It's been a long time since I worked at Darcy Advertising, which I started at in, 1982, the year of one of the worst snowstorms in February. One of the worst snowstorms I remember in our history, and actually that day was my first day at work.
Really?
And the boss who had hired me called me in the morning and said, I lived in an apartment at the time, my car was buried under a mound of snow. And she said, I'm going to come pick you up for work, which she did very early in the morning, so we had plenty of time to get there. We got there, and my first day in this corporate environment, and she and I were the only two there for hours.
Well, at least you weren't
hours.
The last two there on your first day on the job. At least you weren't the last one.
Right. And I was worried about being the last person. I was really worried about how I was going to get there. So.
Well, you know, what I remember growing up in Kansas City at the time was the ice storm in 83, which took two very large trees in our front yard and had us out of school for a full week with all the power lines down in Kansas
right.
City. That was a year later. But, yeah, it was it was rough. I still remember the Sunday that it hit, just seeing everything in our front yard just completely encased. And I mean, it was a really – I mean, we've all seen plenty of ice storms, but this was a particularly bad one.
I think I remember – we had something like that in St. Louis where people who were parked – some people parked on their driveway that led up to their house.
Yeah.
So it was up on a hill. I remember seeing cars sliding.
That were parked. Yeah.
Sliding down the hillsides. No respect for the driveway itself. So over lawns and.
That's what you call a low friction coefficient, Senator.
Is it? Yeah. All right. So my.
Ask your friend how they like
my
that.
My husband going out to the mailbox at our old house, we had not a very steep incline down to the mailbox. He got down there sliding just fine. Could not
get back up.
It took forever.
Well, I introduced a member of my staff. Thank you. I'd like to read it first.
So anyway, the picture in my head of those cars being moved on their own and sliding, and my husband being stuck down at the mailbox are indelibly etched in my memory. So.
Yeah, so, you know.
Well, are you looking at that? And I was going to actually talk about some of the, if you'd like. Some.
Yeah, do you mind? If you don't mind, there are probably a couple of others that may want to weigh
sure,
in on
happy
either
to.
The amendment pending or not. Well, you know what, Senator, let me, if you don't mind, let's keep talking for a few minutes.
Okay, all right.
If this thing is drafted all wrong, then I'm going to have to deal with that another way. But hopefully it's spot on and we're in good shape. So, you know, what I'm looking at starts with a reference in 188.027, which I think, man, so let's see here. I'm looking at the request for relief in the underlying lawsuit that is being litigated in Kansas City right now, and it references 188.02711E, and I am looking at something here that would appear to bracket out 188.02711E, And that's language that says the location of the hospital that offers obstetrical or gynecological care located within 30 miles of the location where the abortion is performed or induced and at which the physician performing or inducing the abortion has clinical privileges and where the woman may receive follow-up care by the physician if complications arise. So
admitting
we can
privileges.
Check that box, Senator. What's in front of me does that much.
Admitting so privileges.
We've got and my pen just fell, which is
that right? Is that what I heard you say? We're talking about the admitting privileges that are required under Missouri law?
Say that again.
We're talking about admitting privileges, is that
well,
right?
Well, not just yet. Maybe in a second here. I'm going to keep looking.
Okay.
So, all right. So that 188.02711E, that box is checked. And what's kind of weird is that there's two ones here. Point one.
Point physician one. Privileges.
Yeah. So 11E, we've got that. So we're also looking for 188.080 was the next section
right.
referenced in the request for relief. And there's a lot of words here, so I do now have a greater understanding as to why it was this took as long as it did, and I greatly appreciate research staff's work on this. With any luck, it will result in a change in our statutes and laws, Senator. So 188.028 is in the underlying amendment now before the body. So we're keeping a little bit of that language in this. And I'm going to keep flipping through here, inducing or inducement, which isn't ideal, but it's there, not the end of the world. So,
You're looking for 188.080, is that?
I am, and I see here, so there's a reference. All right, so 188.080, and I'm just looking to see if the lawsuit requested that that be struck in its entirety. From enforcing Missouri's ambulatory surgical licensing law against facilities and physicians that provide abortion. So 188.080 has a couple of sections in it, the first of which says any person who is not a physician who performs or induces or attempts to perform or induce an abortion or another is guilty of a Class B felony and upon conviction shall be punished as provided by law.
Right. Now that would probably stay in.
Yeah, and that's how it's been drafted, and I'm
right.
glad you agree with how it's been drafted because it's, forgive me as I'm looking
no,
at
no, that's okay. That's how mine is drafted, too. So,
all right.
Do you remember
okay. I think what may have been done is, your Senator, not for the first time this month or this in the last week or two, it seems like we've been through this before where very insightful legislation that you filed has become a secondhand amendment offered by myself.
Yes, and I appreciate that you're doing that, and I appreciate that these bills get some time on the floor.
That's the second time that's happened. When was the first time that I did that, Senator?
I don't know. Remember if it was...
It was recently.
It was either last week or the week before spring break,
yeah.
And... oh, my gosh, what bill was that on? But I remember that you did offer...
Yeah. I don't remember.
I can't remember either, but I'll think of it as we go forward.
Sure.
But I'm actually, I'm actually hoping that somebody would send me a reminder on that.
Yeah. So, and then there's a change to 197.200, and what I want to make sure is that I'm not missing anything. 197.215, do we simply bracket that?
197.200, I'm going to look on my...
Yeah, so as I'm looking at this, I'm thinking that maybe 197.215 is supposed to be bracketed out, but maybe somebody's spotted that and taken care of it. I don't know.
So are you interested in what my 197.2? It takes out a little bit of the language, and it adds a little bit of language.
So
would you like me to pass this page to you?
You know, that wouldn't ruin my day, Senator.
All right. I'm just giving you the one page with the 197.200, or do you want the whole?
Well, 215 is mentioned in the court pleading.
All right, I'm going to give you the whole.
I think I may have just sprung that. Thank you, and thanks.
It's not in order, but 197.200 is on top now, so you can see that.
All right, yeah, that's helpful. I think that it's pretty clear to me that 197.200. Your changes in SB 71 are faithfully replicated here.
Good.
What
okay.
I am looking to discern is whether there's a change to 197.215 because the pleading in question asks that that be struck, and it's not clear to me that the court isn't going to do that. So let's see here. I guess that's kind of what I'm wondering. Admittedly, the document that I've been handed is longer than I was expecting, but it's only 16 pages long. So it's not like we're going to burn 6,600 pages here, Senator.
I'm sorry. I respected what you tried to do this morning, and actually you may recall, because of the procedures that are in place, our staff, who is always on top of what they're doing, had already put into process the creation of the copies, the 6,600 pages of copies of an amendment earlier. Go ahead. Looks like.
No, you're good.
So at that point in time was when, I raised the question with the senator from Cole about whether it was time for us to get rid of some of the paperwork, quit killing some of the trees, and start coming into the 21st century with computers on our desks instead of bins.
Yeah, in fairness, not everybody is mad enough or nutty enough to be dropping 100-page amendments every day.
Well, you know what?
Much less two in 5 minutes.
That's true, and yet, with the amendments and the amendments to the amendments and the actual bills that we get in paper form, it's a whole lot of paper being utilized.
I understand both sides of that discussion.
I do, too. And you know what? For people who really want paper, I think that they should be able to access all those documents on paper. In my office, I print a lot of things because it's just easier for me to read and write on with my pencil, but I also know that the use of the computer for this information makes things a whole lot more accessible and easy to get on the fly.
Yeah. Senator, I couldn't agree more. If you don't mind, I'm going to terminate this inquiry and move my substitute amendment. Mr. President.
Senator from the first, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I have a substitute amendment.
Send your substitute amendment forward, and has that amendment been distributed?
It has not been distributed, I would ask that it. I will not close until it has been distributed. I seek a waiver of the reading. I move for its adoption. It ends in 0.08s.
You care to explain your amendment, Senator?
Sure. So, 0.08s. Yeah. So yes, Mr. President. Thank you. What my amendment does is revise chapters 188. Well, it revises the underlying amendment. It keeps language in the underlying amendment, which would pertain to language that adds inducement to performance, as well as the emergency reference that is in the current underlying amendment. It does delete much of the rest of the underlying amendment, but it keeps some of it. And then the amendment goes on to revise chapters 188 and 197 in accordance with constitutional requirements as identified by the United States Supreme Court in the case of Whole Women's Health v. Hellerstedt, and in the process of being ruled upon in the case of Comprehensive Health of Planned Parenthood, Great Plains and others versus Dr. Randall Williams and others in the United States District Court for the Western District of Missouri. I think I've already walked through what these changes are. The bulk of the amendment is Senate Bill 71. And now that we have a clear indication that this is the ruling that is coming, my respectful suggestion to the members of the body, the new language that's in my amendment that's different from the underlying amendment is going to be law in Missouri here pretty quickly, I think, by operation of court order. And I think it is appropriate for us to take the cue and revise our laws to conform with the requirements of our United States Constitution. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions, Mr. President.
Does any senator desire to be heard on the substitute amendment number one to amendment number one? Senator from the second, what purpose do you rise?
Inquire of the senator from the first.
Senator from the first, do you yield to the inquiry from the senator from the second?
I do.
You may proceed, Senator.
Thank you for the inquiry, Senator. Senator, I didn't completely follow your explanation of your amendment, your substitute amendment.
Sure.
But I take it from a little bit of what you said that it's going to be substantially similar to Senate Bill 71 as filed by the senator from the 24th.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Along with considerable pieces of the underlying amendment
of the underlying
senator from Johnson has moved.
The senator from Johnson. Got it. Okay. So Senator, I've taken a little bit of look at the at the Supreme. Did I understand there was something about, were you repealing the 72-hour notification?
I was not, Senator. That is not, that part of Senate Bill 71 is not in here.
Okay.
Don't get me wrong, I'd be all for repealing it, but I can't.
Okay.
We're not doing that in this
amendment. We're not there. We're not there. Okay,
yeah.
Good. All right, good.
Senate Bill 71 does do that. My amendment does not. If the research table drafted that in a way that I didn't spot, let me know. But, yeah, we're good. I thought we were good. I looked through it. But stranger things have happened, Senator. But it certainly was not my intention to include that. And I don't
Okay. Again, I don't have your amendment in front of me.
And we're distributing
it. Yet. Again, it's not been distributed. You are having it distributed.
I am.
Won't close until it's been distributed, right? Okay.
Yeah, this has been my day for that, Senator.
Right. Good. The fact is, Senator, you know, look, laws are enjoined, enforcement of laws are enjoined all the time. It's never a hurry. In fact, I would probably argue that it's ill-advised for a legislature to hastily say, well, gosh, a judge might do something, or even when the judge does do something, to right away revise the statute books to jump through the hoops of what Judge Sachs says we ought to do. Again, if his injunction isn't reversed, it'll have the force of law, and the department will obey the law accordingly. But the haste of rewriting our whole statutes based on what courts might do seems ill-advised to me.
Well, Senator, I think it's pretty clear that this is what the court is going to do. And I would also say it's not just Judge Sachs. It's the justices of the United States Supreme Court.
Well,
and I recognize you can distinguish between our law and the Texas law. You've got at least one jurist who says that distinction doesn't make a difference.
Right, right. And that jurist proposes to nullify the law of the state of Missouri expressed by not one but multiple legislatures duly elected by the people of the state of Missouri. And quite frankly, I believe that one jurist is dead wrong. And so to obsequiously grovel before the suggestion that the great Judge Sachs wants us to change our law, to me, I'm just not there with you, Senator.
Well, I'm not surprised to hear you say that. That said, at some point, I think it's very clear that there's going to be an order. I am concerned that by moving on 67 in its current form, we may not be doing the state of Missouri any favors in the pursuit of that continued litigation. And I understand that the Eighth Circuit may offer a different word on it, but I also think, first and foremost, I not only agree with the Hellerstedt decision on grounds of law, I agree with it on grounds of policy, and I recognize I might be outnumbered in that, but that's what we have the legislative process for.
Right, right. No, as I mentioned in our earlier inquiry, that even if Missouri never had an ambulatory surgery center law, and I'm glad we do, and even if we never had a hospital privileges law to protect women from drive-by abortionists who, quite frankly, fly into town, fly out of town, and just essentially dump their complications, which no surgeon would ever do, dump their complications on the nearest emergency room. Just because we have a privileges law to protect women, and just because Judge Sachs doesn't like that law, all of that is really irrelevant to Senate Bill 67 as it stands before us this evening, because even if we had no such ambulatory surgery law, no such clinic privileges law, it would still be a good idea to have annual inspections of clinics to ensure the sanitary conditions of the clinics and to protect women. And it would also make sense to have accountability for the disposition of fetal remains. That would make sense. So, you know, again, I disagree that we should rush to do what His Royal Highness Judge Sachs wants us to do. But even if down the road we thought he was going to prevail, I think Senate Bill 67 is still a good idea, and I don't really see any reason to proceed and to amend Senate Bill 67 on the assumption that Judge Sachs will ultimately prevail, because I am fully confident that Attorney General Hawley is going to defend Missouri law as enacted by its elected representatives, overruled the governor to enact it. I'm confident we're going to prevail over Judge Sachs, but again, I don't see any reason to amend Senate Bill 67.
Well, I will make this point, Senator, and that is that my substitute amendment, if it is the will of the body, would not actually change anything substantive in your underlying Senate Bill 67. It only adds language. It does not take out anything that's in your bill, I don't believe. It adds some of the language brought before us by the senator from Johnson, and it adds language that I think is necessary to comply with what the United States Supreme Court has held the law to be.
Right.
But it does not – my amendment, if it goes on, does not – I don't believe, take out a single word or punctuation mark in your underlying bill.
Well, I believe, you know, again, I believe there are a number of ways that that the Missouri law and the Texas law can be distinguished, and I have a legal memo to that effect. But in any case, I look forward to further discussion. Of course, you're substituting out the amendment of the senator from Johnson. He may have some opinions on this as well. But I look forward to discussion. At this point, I don't believe I'll be supporting your amendment. I know that comes as a great surprise.
Well, you know, that's all right, Senator. That's all right. That, you know what? Free and fair discussion will ever be found the firmest friend of truth.
Absolutely. Amen, Senator. Thank you for the inquiry.
Thank you, Senator.
Does any other senators ought to be heard on substitute amendment number one to amendment number one? Senator from Johnson, what purpose do you rise?
Inquire the senator from the first.
Senator from the first, do you yield to an inquiry from the senator from Johnson?
I do.
You may proceed, Senator.
Thank you for taking my inquiry,
sure.
Senator. So I know I've just had your substitute amendment for a few minutes.
But yeah.
It has the chapter that I opened up, but that's about all that it has from my amendment.
There's actually a fair amount, more than I was imagining there would be, actually. So what we have, give me just a second, I can walk you through this. We have in chapter 188, and it's not 188.027. I've just
kind of scanned. And
yeah, it starts at page 11. Your section 188.028, line 17. At that point, we start with your language, except in the case of medical emergency, and also your addition of the word or induce there on page 11, and then the inducement reference is also carried through to a subsequent subsection on page 13, and then again on page 14. So it's basically made throughout that entire section of statute. I think it's only 188.028, but I think that's the only section that your amendment opens up. So it's a lot less of your amendment than what your amendment initially brought forward, but it is still there.
Yes, I just gave a quick glance and looked for underlines.
Yeah.
And your amendment, substitute amendment, has a lot less underlines
than
mine does.
It does.
Yeah. So
yes.
I just based on the fact of how many underlines that yours has compared to mine, I would have to be against your substitute amendment. And I know, you know, we talked about, you know, I have a daughter. I think our kids are around the same age.
Yeah, mine are 8 and almost 5. My daughter will be 5 at the end of the month.
Yes, 5. And my daughter, I've got a 10-year-old daughter and a 13-year-old son. And I think your daughter's name's Madeline.
Yeah.
Yes. My daughter's Amelia. But, you know, we talked about a little bit about if I know we're in a similar situation.
We are similarly situated in certain respects.
Similarly situated. And, you know, if the mother of Madeline were to take her to have an abortion, you know, I think that you would want to know that. You would want to be notified. And likewise, if something would happen to my daughter, Amelia, and her mother took her to get abortion, I would want to have notification of that as well. Now, under current situation, that would probably happen, but who knows? Who knows what the future may hold? Who
Right.
knows what would happen in the next 13 years with Madeline as well, Senator. So I would have to disagree with your substitute amendment. And if I could get 5 members standing, I'd like to have a roll call on Senate Substitute Amendment 1.
You have 5 members standing, and there will be a roll call vote.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'll continue to look at some of this language, but I'm definitely against the substitute amendment. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Is the other senator desire to be heard on Senate Substitute Amendment Number 1 for Amendment Number 1? Senator from the second, what purpose do you rise?
To speak on the substitute amendment.
Senator, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just to update everyone who's in the body, who's newly arrived in the chamber or listening from their offices, we have a substitute amendment being offered by the senator from the first that would replace the amendment offered by the senator from Johnson. The substitute amendment would repeal some of the most important pro-life advances we have made in the last 2 decades, and some of the most important laws that we have passed in this chamber on any subject to protect the health and the safety of women. It would repeal the requirement that abortionists have privileges at a nearby hospital. That law was enacted because of the practice, the very common practice, of drive-by or fly-in abortion doctors who go to an abortion clinic, do abortions for an afternoon, and leave and fly back to Kansas or Texas, who assume no responsibility for the health of women, who assume no responsibility for the complications that they leave in their wake, that dump women who are hemorrhaging, women who have their uteruses perforated, women who have had their intestines sucked out into a suction curettage machine. It leaves them, dumps them on the nearby emergency room. The idea that we would repeal that law is just unconscionable. Secondly, the requirement that abortion clinics be ambulatory surgery centers. Mr. President, abortions are surgical procedures. Abortions are surgery. Gynecologists who do abortions, and many abortionists, by the way, are not trained gynecologists, they are operations. If the doctors who do colonoscopies or upper endoscopies, if they have to do their work in an ambulatory surgery center, why should not an abortion doctor who is sticking sharp instruments into women's bodies and doing abortions be required to do those dangerous procedures in an ambulatory surgery center? Mr. President, if every time a trial court issued a pro-abortion ruling, we went and changed our statutes, we wouldn't have a parental consent law, we wouldn't have a ban on Medicaid funding for abortion, We wouldn't have a ban for post-viability abortions. We would not have a ban on partial birth abortion. Mr. President, this substitute amendment is bad policy. It constitutes undue deference to a truly awful decision by a trial court judge appointed by Jimmy Carter. I urge this body to reject this substitute amendment. Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on the Senate substitute amendment number one to amendment number one? Senator from the first, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire the senator from the 24th.
Senator from the 24th, do you yield to an inquiry from the senator from the first?
I do. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator, you may proceed.
Well, Senator, now that members of the body have had a chance to review the substitute amendment, when you and I were last talking, it was but a glimmer in my eye. We have now heard from the senator from Johnson. We've heard from the senator from the second on their take on my substitute amendment. Senator, do you mind my asking, what do you think?
You know, I am kind of appalled by the language and the description of events around abortion. You know what happens when we continue to limit women's access to a safe and legal abortion?
You push them into precisely the kinds of circumstances that I think we've just heard complained of.
Exactly. So it sends women back to the back alleys, to abortions that are so, to any kind of health care that would be so egregious by people who aren't medically trained, by for outcomes that I can't even imagine how horrific they must be. But the reality is what we're trying to do is protect what you and I are trying to do.
Yeah.
What the judge is trying to do.
Well, and the United States Supreme Court is trying to do.
Pardon me?
And what the United States
Supreme
Court is trying to do.
And what the U.S. Supreme Court is trying to do is to say, let's keep women's access safe and legal so that there are not complications. This is one of the safest medical procedures out there. And we keep getting these horrific pictures painted of what happens to a woman who is accessing her constitutional right to an abortion. And quite frankly, I am disgusted and appalled by it, and disgusted and appalled by the names that Judge Sachs is being called. I'm
well, he is a Carter appointee, Senator.
Pardon me?
He is a Carter appointee. That was factually.
Right.
An alternative.
That was brought up again as obviously to imply that there is a problem
with him
because he is
his commission counts the same as any other president's, yes.
So the idea that the description of what this medical procedure is would be used to, in the most extreme, horrific case imaginable, and I don't even know if it's based on any real case. Certainly the men in this chamber probably have had much less experience with anything to do with women's access to abortion than some of us who have maybe gone and stood by and stood with a friend of ours who is a female going through this procedure. But to imply that this is unsafe and to talk about ripping out women's guts when we know that not to be the case is just frankly appalling to me. And misrepresents the truth and misrepresents what will happen should these laws remain in place and should the senator from the second and others in this chamber continue to inch their way to undermining a woman's access to this constitutional procedure.
Well, Senator, the laws that we have on the books right now violate that are the subject of my substitute amendment, violate the Constitution of the United States. They constitute an undue burden on a woman's reproductive freedoms, and we don't need to look to one trial judge in Kansas City for that. We can look to the United States Supreme Court for that. And
That's a great point.
And look, reasonable minds may differ about whether there are meaningful differences between the Missouri statute and the Texas statute that was adjudicated earlier this summer, but regardless of that, I think it is a more than fair question for us as a state, particularly in the face of a recent United States Supreme Court President, particularly in the face of pending litigation, where it's very clear what that is going to be going, at least at the trial court level, to question the constitutionality of what we have on the books. And again, reasonable minds can differ
sure.
on whether this ought to be a woman's decision or the decision of the people in this room or of a county prosecutor.
Right.
Reasonable minds can differ on whether there are meaningful differences in the eyes of the law between Missouri statute on point and Texas statute on point. But it is a more than fair question to ask of the members of this body to weigh in on, given where we find ourselves, both in the legal proceeding and as a matter of policy.
Right.
And I'm not, you know, a reference was made to, well, if we did, if every time a court was going to rule our law unconstitutional, we repealed it, we wouldn't have a whole bunch of laws. Well, I get that. I'll note that I'm not calling for the repeal of any of those laws, although if somebody wanted to amend my amendment, you know, we are where we are.
Right.
But my associate amendment. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about specific sections of law that are enumerated in pending litigation that arises out of a very recent United States Supreme Court decision that is the law of the land.
Right.
People may not agree with it. That's okay. Plenty of United States Supreme Court decisions I don't agree with as a matter of policy. And we'll just start with Citizens United.
Right.
Buckley v. Valeo. I mean, and that's fundamental to our very system of government.
Absolutely.
And that's just a couple. There are plenty of others. But as a matter of policy, as a matter of law, well, that's what we've got the United States Supreme Court for. That's what nine, or at the moment eight, Americans are charged with that no other Americans are charged with. And as the late Justice Scalia, whose seat still remains vacant as of this hour, I believe, said, the United States Supreme Court's rulings are not final because they are infallible. They are infallible because they are final.
Right.
Well, Senator, I didn't have much doubt as to whether I would successfully persuade the senator from the second to support my amendment, or for that matter, the senator from Johnson to support my substitute amendment. But I think, given where we are, it is more than fair game.
Absolutely. And I think that we would be remiss if we didn't bring up these questions, especially when, again, the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled on these particular items that you are trying to change based on your amendment, that they've ruled on those already. So why we wouldn't go ahead and move forward based on what our Supreme Court has said is beyond me. And again, the only intent is of keeping these current Missouri laws in place. All it's doing is kicking a can down the road. But in the meantime, what it's doing is preventing some women from getting the access that they need in the one abortion clinic that we have in the state of Missouri, in St. Louis.
Yeah.
And limiting doctors' abilities to serve there. So, and limiting women's access if they live across the state, or, you know what, sending them off to another state where we as Missourians can't even serve the people in our state who are our constituents and the people that we're supposed to care about to access what is constitutionally legal.
Yeah. Well, Senator, I agree. Look, I laid out the issues. An inquiry with you and an inquiry with the senator from the second. We got our amendment ready. We got it filed. We've heard from the senator from Johnson, the senator from the second. I've heard from you. Other members of the body may wish to weigh in on this substitute amendment, and I'm not going to stand in their way if they want to do that. So what I think I'm going to do, and it may very well be nobody else has anything to say about it, and we'll be roll calling this here in just a minute, but I think at this point I'm going to afford other members of the body the opportunity to weigh in. You and I have said plenty. If you want to continue and debate, that's up to you. But I'm going to let the other 32 senators participate at this point, Senator. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on the substitute amendment? Does any other senator desire to be heard on substitute amendment number one to amendment one? Here, Senator from the ninth, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Thank you, Mr. President. May I inquire of the senator from the 13th? Actually, Mr. President, I will not inquire of the senator from the 13th. If I may inquire of the senator from the 24th.
Senator from the 24th, you yield to an inquiry from the senator from the 9th.
I do.
Senator from the 9th, you may proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, of course, for taking the inquiry.
Absolutely.
I know you've been up for a while. Here we are again. We were here last night, yesterday evening, and here we are again on the same issue. And there's, of course, been an amendment here. And, you know, I think we talked about yesterday that a few years ago, it was very tense in this chamber when we had many
right.
of these discussions. And we felt relieved that there was at least one issue that we hadn't had to deal with for a few years. And here we are again. So I hate that we're here.
I know? Do, too. I hate that we're doing things that undermine a woman's access to her full range of reproductive rights.
Absolutely.
As guaranteed by the Constitution of the
right.
United States.
And it's about choice.
Absolutely.
I don't think for any of us it happens to be about being pro-abortion, but certainly it happens to be about choice.
Right.
And within that realm, just wanting to make sure also that people are safe.
Right.
You know, that the avenue and whatever decision they make, that they are safe alternatives for people, you know, as they make whatever decisions they make in this world. So so I just kind of wanted to talk to you for a few minutes. And
right.
Wow.
So you understand. So the senator, if we can just review so we're both up to speed, but the senator from the first
right.
has a substitute amendment, and that substitute amendment is based on the decision, the Supreme Court's decision in Texas
mm-hmm.
that said we cannot put undue burdens in the way of women who are trying to access their right to an abortion.
Right.
This and so those undue burdens are twofold in that particular case, and that is what the senator from the first has mimicked, if you will, in his amendment that says that doctors do not have to have admitting privileges with a hospital within 30 miles of where the abortion might take place.
Okay.
And let me just find my notes here.
Right.
And the second portion is, sorry, bear with me here because I've lost what I was. And the center does not need to be an ambulatory surgical center. So those, I believe, are the changes put forward by the senator from the second, and I say I believe because that's in my Senate Bill 71, which has not yet been heard in committee, but my Senate Bill 71 goes a step further than this. But he based this on the Supreme Court case in Texas
okay.
that says those rules, those laws that were put into place in Texas and that exist in Missouri inhibit a woman's access
right.
to safe and legal abortion. So
right.
Those laws were struck down there, and we have an opportunity because of a memorandum that the senator has seen that was received by counsel, I guess defending Planned Parenthood, I want to say. I may be wrong about who they were defending, but counsel from your neck of the woods, from the Kansas City side of the state, that said, I just want to put you on notice that these laws are most likely, I mean, I don't know that, but they're going to be struck down here. So you want
right.
to get your ducks in a row. You want to get your things in order.
Right.
Because that's what's going to be happening, and I'm going to give you a heads up on that. So
right.
the senator shared that information with us today. We're dealing with that instead of the underlying amendment that was put forward by the senator from Johnson that was, again, the two-parent the additional, the second parent notification.
Right.
Right. So do you have any thoughts about that second parent note? I know that that was talked about and then withdrawn yesterday
right.
on the floor when we were talking about, I guess, Senate Bill 41.
Yeah. I do have some thoughts about it. I mean, I think, you know, of course, with most things in here, I think it depends on the circumstances. I can understand that there may be some non-custodial parents that would want to know, all right? But I also understand, depending on those circumstances or depending on their relationship with the child.
Right.
I think, you know, we had a discussion, or there was discussion yesterday on if that person happened to have been the person that had offended or some other criminal offense relative to that child or other folks. Of course, I think that would be cumbersome, of course, for the family. What if that daughter, as you said, I believe yesterday, happens to be pregnant by that father?
Right.
And those are even the most extreme.
And how
cases.
Does she prove that? And again, as she's trying to do that, or the mother is trying to do that, time is marching forward. And,
right.
You know, we want the girl, the victim,
right.
to have an abortion as early in her pregnancy as possible.
Right.
So this just creates a situation, I think, because we're not sure of what proof is required. I don't think
right.
anything was spelled out about how we would go about getting this information, because there was a list of exceptions noted in that
right.
Amendment, but
there were some, and I think
there were exceptions, but I don't even know how you go about proving, or who you have to prove to, that your spouse or former spouse was convicted of a crime in another country, and that's why you don't want to tell that person what's going on with their daughter.
Right, and you know, and those happen to be obviously some potential cases, but probably more extreme. But what if you have the event that a child just does not have a relationship with that other parent?
Right.
If they happen to be raised by the mom and they have no relationship whatsoever with the dad, or
right.
if they happen to be raised by the dad and really don't have a relationship with their mom. I mean,
right. And, you know, so, that was one of the, during the hearing, I mean, that was one of the situations, or one of the comments that was brought forward was, not all families communicate well.
Right. Right.
We can't presume to understand what goes on in a family and how that disclosure to the second parent, to the non-custodial parent, is
right.
what kind of reaction that's going to create, what kind of rift in that family that might create for the rest of their lives.
Right.
You know, not everyone can talk to, as you said, their mother about certain things or their
right.
father about certain things.
Or if the dad happens to be absentee. For the most part. It's not that a child may not know their father, but if that father has not contributed to that person's life in some way, I would, on any medical, I mean, luck, I've been very blessed. I had a wonderful, absolutely wonderful dad and a mom. But if I were in a situation such as that, where I did not have as much of a relationship with one of my parents, and even though I may know him, but did not have, I felt like I had a emotional relationship or attachment with him, depending on certain circumstances, I certainly, not with that probably procedure or any other medical procedure, that would not be the first person, of course, that I would call. I mean, you typically call the people that are either important in your life, that you know have cared for you and have, you know, had a commitment to your success or whatever. So, you know, we have there are a lot of folks that don't have relationships with one of their parents, and it doesn't mean they don't know them. And in that event, you know, having to contact them for something that happens to be so personal.
So personal. And,
right.
You know, and this, what this law doesn't consider either is that, you know, it talks about somebody must have been convicted of a crime in order to allow the daughter and the custodial parent not to to be exempted from notifying them. And, you know,
and then I had something with that too on the other end of that. I mean, of course, if they were convicted of some heinous crime and you didn't have as much of a relationship, but what if you have those parents years ago that had done, you know, and I don't have a copy of the but I thought about this last night. I don't have a copy of the
amendment
in front of me. But what if it was check kiting or something of that nature, but they actually had a relationship with the dad, and then they don't have, you know, I don't know. I just felt as if,
well,
it was...
you know, I think that in those families where it's appropriate, I think that both parents can and should be told. And,
I agree.
And I think that
where
the daughter and the custodial parent will make that decision.
Right.
And I'm hopeful that, you know, we will see what we consider to be that old Leave It to Beaver-ish kind of family. Of course, they didn't have any girls.
Right.
Probably for good reason. In that show, but that family that communicates well, that talks, that gets through, really what this is a crisis for that young girl who is making a decision to have an abortion. I mean, this is not a situation that anybody wants to put themselves into, right? So I think, you know, if we were all those kinds of families, fine. We wouldn't even have to have this bill, but we don't have to have it because we aren't all those kinds of families. So let those families who make that choice to notify both parents do that.
Right.
But don't presume that we as a legislative body understand the dynamics in each and every family where a young girl is the victim of some kind of perhaps sexual abuse, violence, incest, or it finds herself pregnant and needs to terminate that pregnancy. So we know one parent's going to know. That's a, you know, I think that's a positive thing, although frankly, I'm not sure that I how much I would support that. But these are minors, so one parent will know. So that is probably a good thing. But when you take it upon yourselves as a legislature to presume that you know better than
those families,
a family, than the mother and daughter or the father and daughter, I think that we are putting big government, once again, encouraging big government to get in the way of decisions that are very personal, family decisions that will have, that may have ramifications for the long haul.
I agree there. So, you know, it is a difficult, this is a difficult discussion, obviously, for many of us to have. And there is a lot of emotion, typically on both sides of this issue. And so it is. It's one of those areas for which I feel women deserve a choice. And it doesn't mean that I need to be in their backyard or in their kitchens or in their homes shaking my finger at them about what they should and should not do in a case such as this, especially depending on the circumstances, whether it is good or not good enough, or whether it is good or not good for me personally is my own personal decision.
All right. And you know what? I trust women to make those decisions. And even
if they think
these
are best
women,
for them or
and
their
again,
family at that time.
They already have one parent involved. So I trust that a good decision is going to be made, that this has been thought through, and that whether or not the non-custodial parent should be notified, I'm going to leave that decision in the hands of that.
And here's what I'll say, too. Just the very human side of me, it would be very difficult for me to make a decision to terminate a pregnancy. However, I don't know how I would feel if it happened to be my daughter, who happened to be at a young age, that became pregnant by a very unfortunate, terrible event or a terrible person. How would I feel about my daughter then having to carry that child to term and raising a child? And would she feel comfortable? I mean, it's just all of the emotion that comes along with that. On a situation, a tragic event that could take place, I'm not certain how I would feel. I'm not certain how I would feel about
that. Well, I agree with you. And at the end of the day, I think when we keep putting into place legislation like this, what we're really doing is chipping away bit by bit at a woman's ability to access her full range of reproductive rights.
Right,
and that's what we're doing. We're trying to shame women. We're trying to intimidate women. We're trying to do this with their by involving their parents, regardless of whether that's appropriate for the young woman, because she is a young woman. For the young woman involved. So we are going in and making every decision for you. Have to wait this long because we can't trust you to make your own decision. You got to give it more thought, 72 hours more from the first time you saw that doctor.
When we clearly make a bunch of decisions that we certainly don't require ourselves to wait 72 hours either. And we make a lot of decisions in this building that really, truly do affect the lives of people. And I don't think we give anybody else that stipulation that we've got to come back in 3 days and think about it and come back and let's talk about it again or think about it again.
Right. And, you know, if we really cared about keeping women from needing to access abortions, what I think we would do is ensure that there were opportunities for women to learn about the full range of contraception available and to be able to afford to pay for it in one way or another, whether on a sliding scale. So
I
if
agree.
We really cared and if we were really concerned about these women getting pregnant, we would make sure, and especially
it's about
these younger women.
It's about resources available so that it does not happen. It's about all of those things that really would be important if we really want to wrestle and tackle this issue of abortion, too.
Right. So instead, all we want to do is deny or stand in the way or right. put another hurdle in front of a woman who is trying to access this right. One more hurdle, intimidation, bullying almost. Yes, you're going to have to go home and you're going to have to tell your mother and your father. Or you're going right. to have to make sure they're both notified. You know what? That is not my role right. here as a legislator. To say that to a family, that right. I am going to intercede and intervene in family dynamics because right. my judgment as one of 34 in the Senate about your personal health decisions is better than yours.
Right.
Do we do that when somebody wants to have an operation on...
We don't.
...their heart, open heart surgery, or
right.
Kidney replacement? We don't do that. This is about stopping women's access to what's constitutionally legal, access to an abortion.
Right. So what is the age? 18 that the parents have to be notified? Is that what it was?
You're asking me if it's under 18?
It was 18 and under, right?
I
can't remember.
I've got the bill in front of me. I'm looking for the
Well,
age.
My point is, too, you have 17 and 18-year-olds that don't live at home as well. So it's one thing if they happen to be living under the roof of their parents. It's another thing if they happen to live in another city or if they don't happen to be living in the home with those parents at age two. So
this is a minor. So right. it's described as a minor, so I guess okay. that's anybody under the age of 18.
Okay. Well, still, they're 17-year-olds that don't live at right. home with their parents, too, when they're
right.
trying to... Right.
And, you know, they're obviously sexually active, or they are a victim of some terrible, horrendous,
right.
I can't imagine anything
right,
worse,
course.
Kind of a crime.
Right.
So one of those two situations. So, again, we already have parental consent, but to
right.
to expand this, when we don't know the family dynamics, it's very, very concerning to me. So this substitute amendment does two things. It would align us with what the Supreme Court has said about the Texas case.
Okay.
And at the same time, it's a substitute for the underlying amendment, which forces a woman to tell both parents, in most cases, regardless of the situation.
Yeah.
So, you know, yesterday, well, I'm sorry, your inquiry.
No, it's okay. So I'm going to get off topic for a moment.
Sure.
Do you guys have an election in your area today?
Yes.
Okay.
I haven't. Well, let's see. What time is it? Oh, my gosh. It's 9 o'clock.
It is. It's 9 o'clock.
I bet we know the results, and I haven't even looked.
Well,
I'm excited to hear. So now I want to get on my on my computer that we don't have here or my phone and find
right.
out. So the Senate Minority Leader is showing me that she has all the information, and... I'm a little bit envious because I haven't looked that up yet. All right, so
is your
did you have
election
and you had elections?
Well, yeah, we did. We had.
So
we had,
how did things go?
Well, I, you know what? I guess I can find out a little bit from certain websites, but you know, our election authority is not very good sometimes about posting the results. So if you're not looking at it on the news, or if you don't happen to pull it up, I guess online.
Right.
But it kind of bothers me when you know our election board clearly has the ability to post and doesn't for folks that happen to be looking. So you're looking for other outlets to figure out, you know, kind of where things are.
Well,
so I don't have a good
colleagues,
idea.
The spouse of the senator from the 4th mm-hmm. Had an election today. And so...
Oh, he did. You're right.
Right.
You're right.
So, you know, I'm anxious to hear how she fared. I feel confident that the smart voters of the southern part of the city of St. Louis would have supported her, but... We'll see what those results are.
Right. Well, we had a number of issues that were important to
right.
Some of us on our ballot. And so for the city of Kansas City, that's mainly, I think, where our, you know, most of our interests were. We had 5 issues on the ballot, actually. Bond issues, and then there was an 8-cent sales tax to do some revitalization of the urban core. And then there was a question 5 that had to do with limiting the fine of marijuana offenses, I think, to like $25 or something of that nature. So it is. I'm just kind of curious, you know, as to where things are.
Right.
Too.
Well, I just got word good news, and probably it should be the senator from the 4th who takes great joy in saying that his wife won her election today. But he did just text me, and so we want to congratulate Sarah Wood Martin.
Oh, good.
Who is okay. Now will be a St. Louis City alderwoman. Alderman. Good. I know they say alderman for everyone.
That's awesome.
So. Anyway, congratulations.
Congratulations to them.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Of course. So I just kind of wanted to just ask you a few questions. You know, I've been sitting here on the floor, and I was in a series of text messages because I can't, you know, be at home for a number of different issues. And so I could hear some of the discussion, and some of the discussion I kind of diverted from a little bit. So I thought before, you know, we let this thing close, that we at least, you know, talk about it a little bit. So thank you for the inquiry.
Thank you, Senator. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Mr. President.
Senator from the 9th, what purpose do you seek recognition?
Thank you. May I inquire of the senator from the 4th, please?
Senator from the 4th. Senator from the 4th. Senator from the 4th does not appear to be in the chamber. Sergeant of Arms summons the senator from the 4th.
Mr. President, senator from the 9th. I'll withdraw that request. May I please?
Senator from the 9th, why are you seeking recognition?
Thank you, Mr. President. May I inquire of the senator from the 13th, please?
The senator from 13th is in the chamber.
Senator from the 4th might be busy. I just kind of wanted to chat with him for a couple of minutes. But of course, you know, maybe he's someplace or in his office celebrating right now.
Senator from the 13th, do you yield to an inquiry from the senator from the 9th?
I do.
You may proceed, Senator.
Thank you. Senator, I know this is a difficult issue for you, and I think you and I have talked about this privately, just what our thoughts are on this issue, of course, that we have at hand, and that it does make it difficult for us. When you happen to be a proponent of choice, it clearly makes it difficult. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're a proponent, of course, of abortion or termination of pregnancies. But it clearly means that, you know, some of us believe that a woman has the right to choose and make her own decision.
Well, at the end of the day, Senator, I think that everybody wants the same thing. They
right.
want to reduce abortions in this state.
Right, I agree.
And that's what's really important.
Right, but with that, we kind of need to step up some of our preliminary work, too, to just kind of give some help and assistance so that that doesn't happen. And some of that comes with education, some of that comes with other resources. And, you know, I think you're right. I think all of us would love to get to that place.
It would be, you know, but the world's not perfect.
Right.
And it would be a perfect world if it was an issue that we didn't have to dwell on. But if it's there, I want it to be safe, and I want it... I want folks to have access to safe health care.
Right.
I don't want anybody harmed in the choices they make.
Right.
At the end of the day, they're their choices. You or I or anybody else doesn't have to agree with them, but the law is the law.
Right.
And I think I'm past the point of talking about the subject matter and more...
Right.
More, why are we still here?
Beating a dead horse, right?
Yeah.
And one of those issues we're never going to agree on. So, because we're kind of tired of beating this dead horse, and we did have a reprieve a little bit for a year or two, you're on your phone there. I'm assuming you're looking at some election results. Did you guys have any big issues?
I have a family member running out in one of the school districts in St. Charles County.
Okay.
And I was looking at that. I was looking at the race in Ferguson for the mayoral race in Ferguson.
Oh, okay.
I was looking at some aldermanic races in Florissant. One of those was contested.
Oh, wow.
But as I can multitask, Senator.
I know.
I can multitask. Did you have a lot of issues on the ballot? I was looking at Prop P in St. Louis County as well, which was to really kind of...
Yeah, we
aid police officers in unincorporated areas. Did you have a lot on the ballot up in Kansas City?
Yes. Well, we did. We had five issues on the ballot in Kansas City.
Five?
We did. We had some, there was a bond, there were some bonding issues on the ballot. One was street bonds. We had one for flood control, one for an animal shelter. And then we had a central city sales tax, and then we had a marijuana question, asking if the city should limit municipal court punishment for marijuana possession to a maximum of a $25 fine, which is kind of an interesting thing, too. I'm looking at the latest results on that, with 69% reporting. We had 33,133 yes and only 13,524 no, which is quite interesting, actually. So I was kind of curious as to where that might end up. You know, when we have this whole conversation surrounding marijuana, I'm clearly, in my 10 years here in the Capitol, that polling has certainly moved pretty far in the other direction. And it has for, you know, for me as well, I will say. Not that I want to get off into this complete discussion, and I'm not, I don't want to give anybody the impression that I'm for recreational marijuana, because I'm not, but certainly in some instance, medical, I believe, deserves, probably needs at this point some discussion, and I have far moved toward that position when clearly I was not there, you know, a couple years ago. So,
well, I would, you know, I was looking at some of these, when we were sitting over there talking, and I was reading some of these results, and I thought, well, those can't be finals. There might only be 20 people voting in for an aldermanic race.
Wow.
The 20 people are going to decide who's going to represent all 400 or 500, whatever they are, 1,000,
wow,
depending on the size of the
That's always amazing, isn't it? It's like
it is amazing
apathy
to me.
Right.
The people do not, you know what, that's one thing you can do that doesn't cost you anything.
Right. It is.
Go out and exercise your right, and it doesn't cost you a dime.
Right, right. So it is it's an interesting thing here. So I'm interested to see where some of these things end up at the end of the night. I think the last thing that I have here, and I'm looking at another website, not the website from our board, it happens to be about 69%. Interesting. So we also have a 1/8 cent Central City sales tax. That happens to be barely winning right now, which is important to some of us. You know, we do a lot of economic development in the downtown area, in the Western Corridor, in the Brookside area, South Kansas City, but we have not done very much in the urban core. And so we had folks had gotten together and, you know, got a bunch of petitions together and put it on the ballot. And it's interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see where that one ends up as well. But you know what? There was an interesting, you know, I have complained and complained about our water bills in Kansas City, and as much as we have this bond issue, I wish that there's something that we could do to try to alleviate some of the burden that our water and sewer bills have placed on many of our residents. And if my office is listening, I think I have a folder that has some information in there relative to this. I would love for them to be able to bring it down. But there was a documentary on public television, and it said that our water rates have increased 240%. And it said that in 2008, the city of Kansas City, or the water department, decided that they would begin cutting off delinquent bills. So they have 150,000 customers that are water customers for our water department. And from 2008 to 2016, in 8 years, they had cut off at some point more than they've had over 140,000 cutoffs when we service 150,000 households. And part of that is probably because of the increasing rates. The water bills have clearly gotten higher than many of our other utility bills, and it becomes very difficult. Water used to be the cheapest thing, you know, the cheapest utility, basically, that you could afford. And now, certainly in Kansas City, it happens to be the most expensive, one of them.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Our water rates are ridiculous. And, you know, many of us have talked here about auditing our water department to make sure that the funding, since they have had such increased rates, part of it is for infrastructure improvements that we've not made. And so we're hoping that really they're using that money as they should.
What?
They're using the money with the increased rates. We're hoping that they're making the upgrades to the infrastructure as initially promised. And I will tell you that I'm not...
Do you have municipal... Is it a municipal water company or...?
Well, yeah, our water department is through our city. So it is. So we don't, you know, we don't do the whole contracting thing. Yeah, it's our municipal water department. So, yeah, it becomes pretty... You know, they had a documentary Thursday or Friday. So they had some very interesting information on the fact that it's very difficult for a lot of people even to be able to afford water. And it's required by law that you have running water.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a whole other discussion that I would probably have with the senator from the 7th as we've talked about these water rates and how ridiculous they have clearly gotten over the past couple of years and unaffordable for many folks. And they had a documentary talking about the folks that happened to save tap water in jugs and other, you know, old, not old, but like orange juice bottles and old milk jugs around the house for fear that they won't be able to afford their water bill and their water will then get shut off again.
Sad.
Until they can make up, yeah, the difference. But it's a very serious problem we have in Kansas City, and I do believe our probably water and sewer rates are probably the highest in the state. And I do understand that there are some other rural areas that have higher water or sewer rates as well, but ours happens to be in one bill, and it becomes very unaffordable for people. It does.
Yeah, that's something you need to sustain.
Right.
That's what you need to sustain life, and it costs, when the costs are out of reach for people, it's a weird world, Senator.
So the city shuts off water connections if the bill is about $150 or more and 56 days past due. And I will tell you, as a single person, as the only person living in my house, I've had water bills of $128 a month.
Wow, and you're...
One month.
Well, you know, I'm on Missouri American Water. And I think I'm billed every 3 months, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the senator from the 24th could confirm that if I get billed once a month or quarterly, because she's on the same water system I'm on. And I don't think my last three water bills added up to that. And
Oh, my gosh. It's ridiculous.
There's five people in my household.
Our water
there's
bills
four
are,
adults.
Our water bills are terrible. My water bill has been more, as I said, than my other utility bills, my lights and gas.
Wow, if that was going on at my house, I'd think I had a water leak somewhere. I really would.
Well, I said earlier that I've had folks that live in newer homes, and even though in the fall they were watering their lawns, and maybe not even every day, they had newer homes. They did not have water leaks. They had them come out and check them. But I had folks who had, you know, one lady had a $759 water bill for 1 month. She certainly thought that there must be a leak somewhere, had someone check. She had been watering her grass. But those were the rates for the, I mean, they're incredibly high. Incredibly high. And it's not uncommon for me to hear folks monthly not having leaks having $500 water bills a month that have a family.
So, Senator, the power of this little device and the power of these microphones, I was just informed that I get billed quarterly.
You're billed quarterly?
I get billed quarterly from the water company. And the average bill is $101 a quarter or $35 a month. Yeah, I thought my water.
Every quarter. I pay three times of that a month.
That and the gas bill at my house are the cheapest things.
Yeah.
But the only thing that's powered, well, everything but my furnace is powered by gas. My stove and my hot water heater and my dryer are all gas, but I heat with electric. I have to spread it around the utility, Senator.
Right. Right, you do. So anyway, that's something probably of the next day or two that, you know, myself and one of the other senators from Kansas City, or probably both, and one of them has a small part of Kansas City, will, I'm sure, be talking about, because I'm not sure whether they had seen the documentary that was shown, I believe it was Thursday. But, you know, in as much as the water rates have gone really high, there certainly have been relief. There's relief that has been given for water rates to, say, sports clubs and sports teams. And I won't name them specifically because, of course, I happen to be a supporter. But when you have residential folks that are picking up the cost for that and, you know, they're receiving a lot of their water for free and they have a large facility, then it does,
What you just said, I had the person in that's the candidate to run the Department of Revenue, and I asked him what he's seen as his job in that position, and he said it was to reduce taxes for corporations and businesses, and I guess he believes it'll trickle down. Because they said, I worry about my constituents. I don't worry about the businesses when they get a break. What about the folks that I serve? When do they get a break? And you're right, Senator, they don't get a break.
Right.
It never seems to trickle down to just the average person.
It doesn't. And so, yeah.
I like the guy, though. I mean, I enjoyed talking to him.
Right. So anyway, as I said earlier, in 2008, the city, the water department started enforcing a cutoff policy, and I said this a little bit ago, that, you know, they service 150,000 households, and since 2008 to last year, they had cut off, they had had over 140,000 cutoffs.
Over 140,000?
They service 150,000 households, and in 8 years, they've had over 140,000 cutoffs. And part of that is because the bill is something now that people can't afford. So, you know, it's a difficult issue that needs to be addressed. You know, many of us have talked about doing or requesting that the state do an audit of our water department with the rates that they're charging, hoping that all that money is being used as it should be for upgrades and infrastructure. And you know, this infrastructure question is one that becomes of concern when we talk about the utilities. We talk about utilities and we talk about rates and infrastructure upgrades, and so we become torn thinking about increased utility rates, knowing that infrastructure is going to have to be done to make sure that the services can be delivered. And, you know, folks are going to have to pay for it. So we're always in a personal struggle over the rates. You know, there's going to be probably some increase in rates. I don't think that it should be 240%.
No.
Over 240%, excuse me. But you know, it's a difficult question. It's a question that we have to deal with here when we talk about other utilities, too, when they try to do upgrades to infrastructure and other things, too. Our infrastructure for our water had not been done in many years, and the EPA sent a mandate to the city of Kansas City that they be upgraded.
And we've had that before. And these,
right.
A lot of these utilities are working with 100-year-old infrastructures.
Right.
And I don't, you know, I don't understand why it's so costly where you are, and I'm sure there's an explanation as compared to where I am.
Right.
And I don't know what the water, say, in St. Louis City, what those water bills are there. I mean, they could be vastly different than what I pay in the county.
No, I think they were similar. I think last year when I checked with a bunch of folks just around the state, I checked, you know, with folks in, from St. Louis County and City of St. Louis and folks in Springfield. And so I think, I think their rates were similar, somewhat similar to yours. And it could have been $50 a month or something, I think, at the most. I checked several of them. But, yeah, it's an issue. It's an issue that we're going to have to address. And I'm hoping that they are using the money as prudently as we should with the rates that are being charged and the upgrades that we say we're using them for are actually being done. And maybe they are. I don't see a, you know, obviously it's underground. But I don't see a bunch of what I think happens to be construction or other things in my area that appears to be upgrades to the water and sewer lines. But, you know, maybe it's going on in other parts of the city. I don't know, and that's what we need information to be able to find out. Right.
How did we get off on this?
You know, I don't know.
How did we, where did we take a turn?
You're right. I think we just got tired of talking about abortion. I certainly am. And it's exhausting. It's an emotional issue. And, you know, why are we here again? And,
well, you know, that's just it. It's very emotional. And I don't think that, I think that people have done a lot of soul searching and a lot of thinking.
Right.
Before they go in there. You don't just wake up and think, I'm going to go over there to that clinic. It's just...
Right.
I don't know, Senator, I've raised three girls, and I don't think any of them have ever had to face those issues. I know they haven't, and I'm grateful for that. But that would have been their choices, not mine.
Right, right.
And I know you've raised a daughter, and it's...
A daughter and a son.
Yeah, I'm just learning about the boy thing.
Yeah.
We got the first one in probably 13 years, I think,
in
our family.
Oh, that was great. That was great.
Yeah.
Good for you guys. That was, that's an exciting time.
It is exciting.
Yeah.
It's exciting, and he's thriving now, so it's just really exciting. It was a little stressful, but now it's all good.
Always impress me when you talk about your grandkids, because I know how much I love my kids. And you said, oh, no, no, like grandkids are like great.
Oh, no, see, here's the difference, Senator. We all love our kids.
Oh, we do.
We love our grandkids and we like our grandkids.
Yes.
We don't always have to like our children.
And I'm always impressed how your face always lights up when you talk about them. And I say, I wonder if I'll feel that way one day. I'm sure I will. But, you know, I'm not really in a rush for my kids to probably start having kids. I guess
it happens.
Makes me older, and I don't know that I'm really ready for anybody to start calling me grandma right now at this point in my life. Maybe in a couple years. I don't know.
That never bothered me. My mother was a very young mother.
Uh-huh.
Like my mom is 19 years older than me.
Okay.
So she was a young grandmother. I mean, she was in her 40s when we all started getting married.
Right.
So she wasn't 50 before she was a grandma. She was a very young grandma. So I guess just because of everything, that thought never entered my mind. But my daughter always told me that one was enough. And when she said she was pregnant, we were over the moon. But that baby was born the day after her daughter turned 6.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And when we were there waiting for him, you know those little plastic bassinets on wheels they put him in?
Mm-hmm.
He was only about this big. He's still only about this big.
Yeah.
But she said, what is that? I said, that's where they're going to put your brother. Yeah. They're going to measure him and they're going to weigh him. And I guess they still do it. I said, and that's where they're going to give him his test. And she said, a test? I said, yeah, they're going to take his Apgar scores. I said, and he's smarter than you. And she looked at me and she said, no, he's not. He can't spell.
Yeah.
I said, well, how do you know? Have you talked to him yet? But she has just really taken to her role as the big sister. She's very protective. She doesn't like the other kids around him because he's too little.
Oh, wow.
She says, they're too young. He's too little. They'll be too rough.
Yeah.
And it's really funny to watch her with him. She's great with them. And I had all four of them on Sunday. The kids all went to the home opener. And after picking up the new little guy and then picking up the one-year-old, why, she was like a sack of potatoes after bouncing him around for a couple hours because the size difference was so weird in a year. How a baby grows, how fast they develop and grow. Right. It's just...
And it's always interesting to look at kids and their relationships with their siblings. I will tell you that my sister and I, now my sister is a year and a half younger than myself, well, almost 2 years, but I have a brother that's like 12 years younger than me, right? So there were three of us. And my sister is very, now she used to be, I mean, right now she's like, you know, a really laid back type of really loving, affectionate, considerate personality. I will tell you, when we were younger, she was the one that was most aggressive. She was always, there was always something. And I was a little more laid back. She was more aggressive. She drove me crazy because she was sassy and all these other things. And
is she, you're, she's the oldest?
No, I'm the oldest.
Oh, you're the oldest. Well, that's why.
I'm the oldest. But she was very, very aggressive. She always did extremely well in school. She was aggressive in everything she'd done, whether it happened to be in school or sports or just in her personal relationships. I mean, meaning, you know, her friends, not boyfriends or anything at the time. But even between the two of us, she was just always, she was very, she was had a much more aggressive personality. I was a little more laid back, but more focused. She was very focused, but extremely intent, aggressive. Everything was, you know, it's like...
Did she get where she wanted to be?
I think so. I think so. She has a great family. She has great kids. And so, yes, yeah, so she's very happy. She lives in Chicago. She went to school at Northwestern and stayed there. I was just having a conversation with one of the folks here about my kids leaving. My son's going to be going to law school in Los Angeles in August. And he said, how do you feel about that? Are you afraid? You know, are you going to miss them? And I said, well, of course I'm going to miss them. But that there becomes a realization that your kid at that point may not ever come home. Yeah. So I didn't really feel that way with my daughter, who was at school at MU, you know. And I didn't feel that way when he graduated from Missouri State. But, you know, to go to a city, and we have a lot of family there. You know, I was born there, and my mom's from there, so we have tons of family on both sides there. So I did. I had to sit back and think about the fact that, you know what, he may never come home, just like my sister didn't. But my kids are twins, of course, and so it's funny for me to see them interact, as they always have since they were young. They pretty much were almost each other's best friends. My son has a very vicarious personality, never meets a stranger. My daughter is very focused, but nice and loving, and she has to frequently tell him to settle down because he's all over the place, telling jokes and all these other things. He lives life to the fullest, that's what I'm going to say, in a very nice way.
So he lives life to the fullest, and when he was at home, you laid awake late at night. Is that what you're trying to say, Senator?
Yes, absolutely. I'm like, you're killing me, okay? You're worrying your mother, and he's like, Mom, I'm just trying to have a little fun.
What don't they
Stop
get
worrying about,
me. If you live here, just pick up the phone.
You know, he
does. Just a phone call will put me to sleep.
Absolutely, but I will tell you that my son never missed a curfew. Never. He didn't. My daughter did sometime, but, you know, they kind of have, they're funny, but they have a very, very good relationship, and so it's kind of funny because as they're getting older, I'm like, whoa, this kind of means I'm getting older. I don't feel like I'm getting older, but I don't know where that threshold is where you feel as if, you know, you're finally getting a little older, but... So I started thinking the other day about, okay, so when my kids actually happen to get married and have kids, what will my grandkids call me? I don't think I'm ready to be called grandma. And so I don't know. It's kind of one of those.
I never was.
Three senators standing. Senator from the second, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, please lay that bill on the informal calendar.
That bill will be placed on the informal calendar. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senator go to the order of business of announcements.
Hearing no objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements. 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 Hearing none, Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, can we go back to the order of business of announcements?
Hearing no objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements.
Very good, Mr. President.
Announcements.
That was a test. Next time it will come without warning. Remind the members, tomorrow is Wear Your Sneakers Day. That's tennis shoes, Senator from Lewis. You cannot wear them during session, but for cancer awareness, I would encourage any fellow senators who are interested to wear their sneakers to show their support to help defeat that horrible disease. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further announcements. 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 Senator from Cole. Senator from Lewis, why are you seeking recognition?
I would like to inquire of the senator from Cole.
Senator from Cole, do you yield to an inquiry from the senator from Lewis?
Yes.
You may proceed, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator?
Yes, sir.
You know, I'd love to support the effort, but it'd be better if I would, instead of buying a pair of tennis shoes that I would never wear, or sneakers.
You'd like to borrow a pair?
No, I don't want to borrow a used pair from somebody.
You're not going barefoot.
Thank you, Senator, but no.
Okay.
You know, if we have a pen or something like that, or if I could donate a little bit to the effort, I'd rather do that than buy a pair of sneakers that I don't have and will not wear.
Fair enough. We know that you are in support of defeating this disease, so that's good.
Yes, it's actually my mom died of cancer, but
We've all been touched by it, but we will make note you do not have speakers.
I do not have. So
you will not wear sneakers.
I will not be wearing sneakers.
And that you're going to write a massive donation check and just not tell Michelle about it. That'd be my guess.
I would buy cheap sneakers, Senator.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Hearing no further announcements, Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. No further business coming before the body. I move the Senate stand adjourned under the rules.
Senator from Cole moves that the Senate stand adjourned under the rules. All those in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate will stand adjourned under the rules.